Hi there, welcome to the world of space design and build. I am your host, Simon Joss. This is a brand new podcast, and episode one sees me interview Graham McGregor from Savills. In this episode, we discuss the new ways of working, working from home, and what are the challenges that multinationals and SMEs are facing with our corporate office space. I hope you enjoy the show.
Genwide. And we are off and running. That was quick. Good morning, Mr. McGregor.
Morning.
How are we doing?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad.
Now, I can see Paris in the background. What else?
Yeah, nowhere near.
What else have we got in the background? You can see Paris. What's behind
New York. You? I think the rest of New York.
Very nice. And you're currently sitting in the wonders of Dubai.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Welcome to a brand new podcast called, we'll call it The World of Space Design and Build, where we're going to bring elements of experiences and advice of what me and my guests have been up to, certainly in the past year, because things have changed quite a bit, haven't they, sir?
Certainly is. A little bit different from last time we met.
Yeah, a little bit different, yeah. So probably about 4 years ago we first met, and one of my greatest kind of, or my most fun experiences of making phone calls and getting to the right person, to which I spoke to about six British people, and then I ended up speaking to you for a great project that we did together on Nokia. So again, many thanks indeed for that. And since then, we've kept in touch. What have you been up to in the past year?
Past year, spent a lot of time locked down, working remotely, all that sort of stuff, like the rest of the world. But yeah, it's coming to life a little bit again now. Working, obviously, got jobs in Dubai, the rest of the UAE, and then obviously looking at branching out a little bit into Saudi, Egypt, Morocco, where the work will take us. There's anything that's an interesting challenge.
Well, the world's a smaller place now, isn't it? Especially when with the fact that we're doing this. I mean, you could be sitting in, time zone aside, you could be sitting in Australia or New Zealand. So, you know, it's probably helping the situation. Give us a quick introduction of who you are and what you represent.
Yeah, so I've been in construction for about 13 years. Spent six in New Zealand, a bit of time of that in Papua New Guinea. Sort of 3 or 4 years in the UK and the remainder here in Dubai in the Middle East. Yeah, project management's essentially been the bulk of it. Worked on everything from base build, more focused on fit out in the UAE region, but yeah, done everything from stadiums and science centres, residential developments, and now more in the office commercial fit out side of things.
Okay. You've transitioned over the past 12 months as well from different organizations. What's kind of the difference between the key accounts that you were doing before and what you're doing now?
Yeah, so it was previously at JLL, big, obviously massive American-based multinational, very similar to what where I am now. I'm at Savills. JLL is probably I don't think there's a part of the construction world that JLL don't touch. They do everything. Savills are a little bit more focused, a little bit different. It's a much smaller team. It's good. It's a new challenge.
Good stuff. I mean, I do not want to be spending the next 30, 40 minutes talking about COVID, but it's very hard to avoid it. We're in a part of the world where I work with multinational organizations. You've been doing that for since we knew each other and well before that. How do you think it's affected multinationals' way of thinking when it comes to the commercial office space? Are they reducing? Are they increasing? What's the kind of trend that you're seeing?
Yeah, it's definitely case by case. There's not so much of a general trend. Obviously, some businesses have benefited from COVID, where some have contracted. So we're working on a project with Reckitt Benckiser, who are responsible for things like Dettol. So obviously, cleaning regimes are now more apparent and more to the forefront. So their offices, they're moving to a new office as you would have done 2 years ago. So they're in the realms of not a lot has changed for them. Some companies are doing more of the renovations in-house where they are, saves a little bit of capex just by renovating their existing space or downsizing within their existing space than springing for the capex of moving. I guess part of that will be the uncertainty about what the world's doing. Mm-hmm. And part of it will be the sort of availability of the funds to do it. So there's things like that. The other thing that I'm sort of more focused on as well is the sustainability side. So things like LEED, WELL health safety, all those sorts of things become a bit more apparent when they start talking about the well-being of staff, mental health, environmental quality, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's something that the stereotype of multinationals could be, not all the time, but could be that decisions or processes take a long time to implement. With the fact that COVID has obviously happened and we are, you know, knee deep into it and over the last year, say 15 months, a lot of processes, health and safety, well-being for the staff, they've been implemented relatively quickly in the grand scheme of things. Certainly when the return to work started to occur. The well-being is an interesting one. I heard a statistic, minor tangent, but I heard a statistic about online, e-commerce percentages. And within a 6-month period, it went from approximately 18% to 40%. Now, if you then, so what they'd done is they'd sort of expedited over a 10-year period the value of e-commerce purchasing. Do you think that will have the same kind of effect on working from home? I think is an obvious answer. People will now take advantage. Remote management using Zoom, and then of course things like health and well-being. Do you think that will, it's now going to kickstart multinationals into really looking at ergonomics, LEED, and health and well-being in a big, big way in 2021?
Yeah, I personally hope so. I think it's the right way to go. People, the drive in people now and the staff and people coming out of universities and the education they're coming through with is flexibility is key, whether that's flexibility of hours, flexibility of working location, and also the quality of that working location. Gone are the days of going to an office and spending 10, 12 hours sat in a cubicle, not seeing the outside world. The offices will change, and we talked before about, is it going to be because of social distancing? Or is it going to be the change in work styles? I think there's a definite, when we started the work from home, there was a lot of people, a lot of senior management that were very nervous about it because I'm not going to be able to see my team. I'm not going to be able to sort of monitor who's doing what, who's where, and what's going on. And a lot of that drifted away when they realized, you know what, the world's still turning. Everyone's still progressing. You're still getting the output. Things are still happening. And that was sort of the initial 4 weeks where it was, oh yeah, this isn't too bad. And then it's, when you lose the flexibility the other way of, I need to go into the office, I really need to have a chat with someone, it's just that little bit more difficult. So I think where we've kind of gone full circle has been a lot of learning. We've now realized work from home is something that is functional, it is achievable, it is doable, but it's not the future of working. I don't think anyone's really sitting there going, you know what, I don't need an office anymore, I'll just send everyone to work from home. Because And one person pointed out to me, it's fine when you're working with your existing team and COVID happens and for 4 weeks, the guys that you know and have worked with for a year, 2 years, 10 years are working from home. But what happens when you have a graduate intake? How does someone new become part of Savills team? How do they build relationships? How do you understand who is the personality that works well in a team and you want to promote them and this, that, and the other? There's an element of human interaction that, for a million different reasons, we'll always need. So I think it will change the way offices are set out. The size and scale of the offices may change. I think it will be a lot more almost university-esque, where you have points of congregation where people will come together on a basis and they'll come in for a couple of hours, they'll work in a collaborative space in a collaborative way, and then they may disappear home. So you may end up spending 2 or 3 days at home, the rest in the office, or you might be a blend of half a day at home, half a day in the office, and you match it accordingly. I don't see offices vanishing. The long-term function of teams and human interaction doesn't really work on that basis, in my opinion. I think there has to be that flexibility and fluidity in it.
There's so many circumstances that you've got to take into consideration. I mean, we started talking about the office space and working from home. So I agree with you that you're definitely going to need to have a base. You're definitely going to need to have somewhere to work from. and that allows that human interaction. You also look at different generations will have different perceptions, or I would find it easier to work from home, whereas someone that has been in an office with a desk, they've sat in the same space, the stereotypical office that is, for the past 20 years, all of a sudden they've been thrown into the deep end of a swimming pool in which they're told they cannot follow their routine. You know, get on the tube, get in a car, on a train, and go into an office and sit there for 10 hours a day. So there's the generational thing as well. But you've also got the logistics. You're right, in which you say maybe 3 days a week you can work from home or you can work flexible. And the other 2 days a week, you've got to come in. The difficulty is where you try and blend a day. You know, if you say you want to go in for a couple of meetings and you only need to go in for 2 or 3 hours, the tendency, I don't think, would be, and certainly this is different in different parts of the world, the tendency is not going to be to go in for 2 or 3 hours and then go home again. Because how long did it take you to get there? You want to go somewhere, you want to be based in a location for 8 to 10 hours or 6 hours, but at least spend a decent amount of time doing whatever work and having that location. Now you have pods, you've got meeting hubs, you've got collaboration areas, you've got closed meeting rooms, you've got focus rooms, you've got phone booths. You know, these are the new kind of ways of working that we're talking about. And we're even going into sort of hot desking. And now hot desking is under question because of the reduced touch points. So there's so many things that need to be taken into consideration. There's not a one size shoe fits all. As you said, each company will have a different opinion, a different perception, a different way of working, which, where does it stop? Where does it start? And where does it stop?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I saw an article recently that the head of, I think it was Goldman Sachs, came out and said that working from home was an aberration that he will look to fix as soon as he can. So it's a generational thing. And there's companies who they're known for working people hard, and people work hard and they work 12, 14 hours a day and it's long hours, and you sit there and you do get ground out. And you can do that. And it is that flexibility. If you are someone who, I mean, there's also companies who've said you never have to come back to the office.
Spotify
is one of them. There's a few now that have come out and said it, and that's fine. You never have to, but you can. There will be an office. And like you say, that I'm the same. I wouldn't want to work from home every day of the week. But when you've got kids, there's a benefit to being able to work from home. There's also the benefit of having a place to escape and go to an office. But if you have the flexibility of hours that you know what you can do, the school run, etc., work from home till work from drop them at the school, go to the office, leave the office at 2 o'clock, pick the kids up from school, work from home for a few hours. That sort of flexibility, I think, makes a huge difference to a lot of people, because especially in COVID, the logistics around family units, especially working from home, if you've got a husband and wife or partners working from home, two people working from home can be quite a challenge, depending on the size of your home. Did you buy a home with the allowance for two different separate working spaces and all that sort of thing? And then kids come into it. So everything is about flexibility, the flexibility in how you work, where you work, all those sorts of things. It's just, I think offices now, it went from being, you've got 100 staff, so you've got 100 workstations, and you've got a bunch of meeting rooms, you've got a place to sit and have lunch, and that used to be it. And then collaborative spaces came in, meeting room pods, phone booths, all these things come in. And like you say, about the generations, I mean, like you say, there's people in the working environment who started out in those cubicles we talked about, where everyone had their own little office or had their own little cubicle, and you go in 10, 12 hours a day. And now you've got guys coming out of university who will sit in a beanbag in a coffee shop with some headphones on, don't really care about the structured environment. They're so flexible and able to connect that it doesn't really matter to them. It's a very difficult environment to do what we do in, because you go to stakeholder meetings and the CEO might say one thing, and as you come down the age brackets or the education brackets, you're like, oh, no one's agreeing on this. It's not going to be, if someone's got a very rigid view at the top and people are wanting to put flexibility in, then it gets challenging.
It's you know, when you watch like American movies in particular, and you see these kind of office environments, or let's say the government environments, and they are literally sitting in cubicles. You know, you think about The Matrix back in the day, some government movies, and they're sitting in high partition cubicles, and the kind of stereotypical I wouldn't say this will be the case going forward, but I'll use it as an example that when people say the word Hoover, it's a brand, but you understand what they're talking about. When people say a Google office, I want a Google office. It's this beanbags. It's this foosball table, pool table, you know, collaboration space. And there's virtually zero desks in and around the area. Now, obviously, it depends on the sector. If you're looking at the legal and the accounting sector, the financial sector, they still have to have an element of desks and an element of closed areas. If you're looking at the sort of technology sector, I think technology and software is really where that, you know, that kicked off, the sort of Silicon Valley-esque type office. It's going to be an interesting time. It's going to be an interesting time for landlords because there's going to be an abundance of space available in which people are still sitting on the fence at the moment. Are you finding that there's a lot of people cautious about making decisions about renewals, about moving, and about, as you said at the start of the conversation, spending that capex because they're not sure what to spend the capex on?
Yeah, I had a conversation yesterday with someone who's responsible for leasing for a number of buildings in Dubai. And what they said was previously you'd have tenants who break clauses and reviews would pass and they wouldn't even mention it. And it just kind of went, whereas now they're at the point they've got, I think they've got something like 180 leases this year in the remainder of this year that are coming up for sort of just break and renew clause negotiations. And like, that doesn't even include tenants moving in. No. And this, that. So the workload around, and and maybe it's just one of these market swings where it's gone from being similar to house markets, it's a buyer and a seller's market. It's now, it's gone from being a landlord market to a tenant market where landlords are having to work a lot harder at looking at negotiations, flexibility, what can we do to retain you in the space? Because it's become a much more competitive market. Mm. And tenants are now much more savvy and they're getting pressure from head office about how much are you spending on rent? Why are you spending that much? Why have you got so much space? We've proved we can work from home and all these sorts of things. Why don't we take a cheaper space? I mean, in Dubai, there's requirements around how much space per visa and that sort of thing. So it's a more difficult negotiation around just disappearing offices. But you can still move to a cheaper part of town if you don't need people to work in the office. Then why don't we just have a blank empty space somewhere in a cheaper part of town? So, I mean, I think it's similar to the COVID learnings. I think the leasing market will come through this and there'll be swings and roundabouts, but I think it'll get back to being in a similar steady position. But at the moment, everyone is still doing that learning of what exactly does this mean for, we've had the, what does this mean for the work environment? And now it's, what does it mean for the actual office location environment? And will there be moves within the cities moving from this area to that area because people are now working from home more? So we don't need to be in the center of London. We can move more to the outskirts, become more accessible to people living outside London and this sort of thing. So it's changing everything from the way people interact and behave to how cities are formed and everything in between. So
exactly, being in the city center and having people visiting you is no longer a necessity. So then therefore the location is no longer as important as it used to be. Yep. It's a bit like you were talking about some projects that you're working on, Morocco, Djibouti, African, North African, MENA region. The MENA region, the world is much smaller, of course, but the MENA region where we're based, you have regional managers. Those regional managers can be far more productive doing Zoom calls than they, and obviously more cost effective rather than jumping on flights to visit relevant locations. Let's touch on sort of project management side of things, because from our perspective, prior to what happened with the pandemic, we were actually managing a project. You were managing a project from Dubai and you came to Qatar twice. So you already had that methodology, and I'm sure you did the same within Saudi. And that's probably going to be enforced even more so now with, let's say, time-lapse cameras. You're looking at four-dimensional scanning, so you can do the walkthroughs on the sites, which is what we as an organization want to utilize and want to kind of implement for the benefit of PMCs such as yourselves. How do you think that will evolve over the next couple of years? Do you think that sort of lack of travel necessity is going to become the norm as well?
I think there's always an element of people wanting people on site. The boots on the ground is always desirable, but there is still the element in lots of places where, especially in Dubai and in the Middle East, where your clients may be based in America or the UK, and they've gone from that one or two visits a project to not actually being able to come out at all. So the development of that, the scanning 3D walkthroughs, to be honest, is definitely a benefit to the construction industry. It's probably wound us on a few years in the space of 8 months, whereas a year and a half ago, never really seen 3D walkthroughs and the scans and all these sorts of things. And now I've got two or three projects that I'm running currently where on a weekly basis, the client is sitting and either walking through walking through the actual live footage update scans of the building, or they're looking at the design development through a 3D walkthrough. And it makes it easier for the client. We sit and look at drawings all the time, but for people who don't necessarily grasp drawings the same way as the construction industry do, it's really difficult sometimes to sit in a room side by side and say, all right, we're doing this here and this will look like this, and here's a sort of static render image. Whereas if you can walk them through the front door of their office, basically walk them through the hallways, through the meeting rooms, to their desk and that sort of thing, It's made design approvals an awful lot faster for us, to be honest, because the client feels much more engaged, much more involved, and much more comfortable that their designers and contractors and project managers aren't just running away with their project and they'll just hand them the keys at the end. So I think it's been great for us, to be honest.
It's funny because it happens in the industry, and it's fairly an open and honest conversation. You know, if you're sending daily reports or you're sending weekly reports with still images, you can orchestrate those images to show the client whatever you want to show them. Whereas when you've got the transparency of a 3-4 dimensional scan and walkthrough on a weekly or a bi-weekly basis, depending on the duration of the overall program, there's nowhere to hide. Then further to that, you add things such as augmented reality, which is what we've done recently for another multinational client who was even more so. It was within the pandemic. There were stakeholders in London, Amsterdam, New York, mainly Dubai, and a couple of users of the client in Qatar. The PMC themselves were also in Dubai. There was no one represented. So all we had to go on during that pandemic was technology. When you implement a three-dimensional augmented reality view and combine that with the three-dimensional and four-dimensional scan, it gives them the vision rather than a still render, and it gives them the reality of how it is forming over a weekly or probably a fortnightly basis, to show the difference between scan number one and or the before scan and the after scan. And I think this is going to become, I won't say the norm, but I think from multinational perspective and stakeholder management, I think it's going to become far more popular. And it's a simple comparison. You compare what you spend on individual time or multiple individuals, flights, accommodation, allowances, etc., versus the cost of a scan that goes into the overall project budget that will allow, obviously, some cost savings to be made. It's not even down to cost, because the cost is actually a benefit. It means that they are being productive in their location without having to spend 4 or 5 days away from their desk or away from family, etc., etc. I'm hoping that that's going to go further forward. Do you think that's something that the PMCs will start to increase the necessity of or the requirements of?
Yeah, I don't see it. It's one of these things that's come out of COVID. It's not going to go away. I don't know why a company, like you say, would say, you know what, I don't want to spend $1,000 on the 3D imaging side. I want to spend $15,000 sending a person there to then come back, and at the end of the day, they're still just reporting secondhand information. Whereas if you do a three-dimensional scan, that information can be sent to 1,000 people. One person doing a site visit is still only one person seeing what's going on. Whereas the image files and the walkthroughs that can be sent out, you could send it to, if you're Google, you could send it to every employee in the company if you want to.
Yeah.
And it helps engagement. It helps employees. One of the difficulties in stakeholder management is, Not everyone in the company is going to be in the room when you're talking about design, what's going on, what's happening, what are the updates. But a 5 minute video or 2 minute video can be sent out once a week and yeah. everyone knows exactly what's going on. Everyone knows exactly what it looks like and everyone's on board with it. So yeah, it's one of the bigger complications in state on the stakeholder side. And it just takes away all the issues. As you say, there's nowhere to hide. If it's a 4D scan of the actual building, what's actually happening, what's actually going on, then it's fact. This is exactly, it's like you're all standing in the room. Great. So yeah, I think it's only going to get better. And to be honest, the construction industry for a long time has always been a long way behind when you look at advances in technology and things like that. BIM modeling took a long time for BIM to sort of get engaged. It's like, what's the holdback? You're paying me more money, yes, but you basically then have a building that is up to date, exact data. I mean, I've done projects in New Zealand where they didn't know what holes were in what walls, and shear walls had people just randomly cutting holes and no one knows what the fan coil states are. And it's, well, you have a system. We have the technology exists in other industries that sometimes construction's just a bit slow to absorb. So
yeah, to implement them. You go from the sort of the stakeholder, let's call it the stakeholder analysis or the stakeholder management. I think with multinationals, the larger organizations, they can't avoid having more stakeholders involved in the process because everyone wants to have their opinion. So if you have 6, 8, 10 stakeholders because of different departments, it's not just their department that they want to have an opinion on, it's the overall project. And you're absolutely correct in what you've said. If that video or that scan is available for people to see and to view, the project manager, the internal project manager for the client, has an easier, relatively easier process or job by advising the stakeholders. They've got a 48-hour window to come back with comments. Those comments are then collated. The report is then sent to contractor or project management consultant to then administer those comments. So while all of the negativity has gone on over the past year or so, it's fast-tracked a lot of the technology items, or it has highlighted a lot of the problems within, let's call it interior construction and design and build that we've been a part of or are a part of. And it's hopefully resolving some issues, and it's resolving time. You know, that procrastination, that decision-making is probably one of the most frustrating things from a contractor or design and build perspective and also a project manager, because there's a set window of that program in which you have a design development period, you have an execution period, testing and commissioning, handover. And if the design development or decision-making is taking longer, then the whole program shifts. So it leads me on to my next part, which is the project collaboration. We know about the design, we know about the site review, which we've just discussed. What's your thoughts on the project collaboration and approvals? Because once again, gone, I'm hoping, are the days in which, certainly in this part of the world, as you will know, everything has to be a physical piece of paper. Everything has to be stamped and physically signed. And if you have stakeholders in multiple countries, that's not feasible. You know, couriers are not as readily available in the Middle East as they would be going from Manchester to London, for example, or Edinburgh to Glasgow. It has to be online collaboration and online approvals. We've used it in a couple of projects. It's worked very well. It has a record, it's time-stamped, it's all drawing-based, you have drawing annotations. Do you think that, and I'm not necessarily talking about BIM, because BIM is from the ground up, and that needs to be implemented from day one, so you have asset registers at the back end, and you've got that location planning for where the services are behind the walls. I'm purely talking about administration. I'm purely talking about the approvals, so there is records, and it doesn't have to take 7 days. It takes 7 hours for it to be issued on a flow to party one, party two, party three, so that each of them approve it simultaneously and the project can move forward. How do you think that's going to affect things going forward, having online approvals?
I think it's similar to the work from home, where previously people were very reluctant to fully trust online approvals, online signatures, all that sort of thing. To the point, I've had a client historically who It was a base build project. There was something at like 1,200 contract instructions that I had to I'd issued electronically and everyone had them. And then the client turned around and asked me for the physical copies. I had to print off 1,200 instructions and deliver a mountain of files that they could store. And so there's the move from the technology exists, then you've got the duplication because no one fully trusts it, which is probably where we were before COVID. So you'd be printing stuff off and scanning it and signing it and scanning it again. So it's scanned and all that sort of stuff. And I think the documentation management, things like Aconnect, have existed for years. And like you say, you submit it, it's time stamped, there's a chain followed, and it's so simplistic. There's no real need for physical signing of paper. I had one issue during COVID where I needed someone to sign something. Oh, I can't sign it. Why? Well, I don't have a printer. Do you not have an electronic version of your signature? No. Didn't know how to do it. I'm like, oh my word. I just don't even know what, like, during COVID, do I need to print this off and drive to your house with a pen and have you sign it sort of stuff? So
socially distance, hand it over.
Yeah, exactly. Hand it through a window and all that. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this stuff has existed. It's not new. It's a very easy thing to do. Lots about construction is difficult, but electronic documentation management has been being done globally in other industries for a very long time. I don't think anyone needs to put pen to paper or a stamp to paper anymore. It's just not the future. I mean, before you even start talking about the environment of printing paper for no printing documents, it's just a waste of time. I don't have any paper on my desk at all, really. I mean, occasionally print programs and things like that because they are easier to read because you need a screen.
Yeah,
an absolute enormous screen, but typically I don't have paper on my desk at all.
If you've got two screens, one for your email and one for your working, or one to compare and one to edit, it's, you spend the money on a screen, call it 750 dirhams, reals, whatever it needs to be, a couple of monitor arms and a sit-stand desk, you know? We're in a world in which we're going generic statement of, we're in a world where things are just going much faster. I think we're of a similar age. I think you're slightly younger. I think you've still got a three in your age. But back in sort of, you know, you have this sort of the joking, you know, what did we do without, certainly out in this part of the world, what did we do without mobile phones? What did we do without email? You know, and it sounds a little bit silly to say it, but eventually we're going to get to a stage where the physicality of something isn't required. You know, never mind the environmental impact on trees and various things like this by not having to print off 1,200 engineers' instructions, for example. The logistics of saving things, the travel, the environment. You know, the environment is gonna benefit to an extent with less travel and people not going to work as often and so on and so forth. When you look at how fast the world has been and is becoming, where does it stop? Because if you're doing online approvals, you're working from home, you're doing four-dimensional scanning, your O&M manuals are all going to be electronically and digitally categorized. They're going to be held on a construction cloud. There's no more binders and folders. Civil defense or Dubai Civil Defense and Qatar Civil Defense documents should no longer be lost. And then, of course, you implement the BIM modeling from A to Z and everything is accurate. Where do you go next? It's not going to happen in 6 months, irrespective of COVID, but even in 5 years' time for this part of the world, it's going to be, you know, 100 times better, unfortunately, because of what's happened. But then where does it then go? You know, where do you stop when you become as efficient as possible? Will multinationals start to reject it? Will there be generations that will start to reject it? I don't know, but I personally am quite excited about it because it just makes everyone far more efficient. We're getting so much more done now. Zoom calls, Teams chats, Google meetups, 10-minute meeting, 15-minute meeting. I just think while it's been such a negative time in the past year, we've got to try and pull the positives out of it. And no doubt the accountants are going to be rubbing their hands together because their KPIs are save the company money. And those clauses, those break clauses are definitely going to be acted upon in 2021. It's a bit of a, we'll deal with it now, and then we'll handle the situation later if we need more space. What's 2021 looking like for you? What's going to keep you busy?
Yeah, we've got a few projects one of the interesting things actually that's happening in Dubai, and probably Qatar is coming to the same sort of point, and coming from Scotland, everything around us is very, very old and very, very established. Whereas here, there's parts of Dubai, I'm doing a project currently where we're renovating the internal common areas and things like that, and the chillers of the building, because they've reached that 15-year lifespan. But the problem is, when you look at Dubai, when you look out the window and tag everything that's at a 15-year end of lifespan, you're like, there's a lot of buildings.
There's a lot.
An awful lot of Dubai is around that age. So it's going to come, there's quite a turning point for Dubai coming up about building owners are now going to get confronted with, what do I actually do? What do I do with this building? Do I need to, because in the time that they've built the building and owned the building, things like Lead and Well have come about, and the environment's much more at the front of people's thinking. COVID's now come about, what are people doing with office spaces? It's a challenging market on all fronts. And then you've got all those things put into it, and it's there's a lot of buildings who I think in Dubai are going to have to be investing in the infrastructure, because people are not as willing to accept the fact that they're queuing in massive queues for lifts. The facades are a bit leaky, so the AC is not quite as good, and all these sorts of things, the power supply to the building's not quite up to scratch, they probably need to do an upgrade, and all these sorts of things. So Dubai grew really, really quickly, which it did incredibly well, but it's just now got to that point where actually huge portions of Dubai are of the same age and have the same expiry date for the setup that they have. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of work, I think, in Dubai. Maybe less so on the actual office fit outs, and maybe around more looking at the building itself, common areas, lifts, chillers. Yeah, the infrastructure in the building itself.
Yeah.
It's all coming to that, probably needs a rethink.
I mean, you're right. I mean, you look at the power consumption, you look at the efficiency of the chilled water and air purification. So again, health and well-being. You look at LEED and the materials, you look at the health and safety, which is also going to be a huge thing. You look at the social distancing because of COVID. Are there going to be one-way systems in the office? Are there going to have to be panels, separation panels? We even implemented automated doors with access passes, so you're reducing the amount of touch points. You look at the ergonomics, people requiring that flexibility, whether it's sit-stand desks, monitor arms, keyboard trays, looking at the impacts, musculoskeletal disorders, various aspects like that. Technology, how is that implemented? Reducing the infrastructure, data infrastructure in particular. You used to have 2 points per person, you've now got 1 point per person. It goes back to that question of, where does it stop? It's always about efficiency. And it's not just a case of how much space. I mean, I had a conversation with a client earlier this week, and they came to me and said, we need 2 floors. We're expanding. I think I've done 3 offices for them in the past 12 years. And they said, we now need 2 floors. And I said, okay, 2 floors of what? I said, what, one building might be 1,000 square meters and another building might be 500 square meters. I said, so how do you know you need 2 floors? And secondly, let's say it's 1,000 square meters. So let's say you've got 2,000 square meters. Where did the 2,000 square meters come from? Where was the analysis? Where was the brief? Let's sit down, let's go through how many people actually need to be in the office, how many meeting rooms are required, what do you use the meeting room for? You know, basically space consultancy. So there's too much of this, or let's reduce space, or let's increase space, and not enough thought into something that's such a capex, and of course an opex requirement. So we're talking millions of dollars over, what would you say is an average commercial lease? At least 3 years? The spending, let's say 2,000 square meters, you can at least a 3-year to 5-year lease, 5 years with a 3-year break clause. That's millions of dollars of an investment for people to not take anything into consideration with regards to the actual space that they need. So you as an individual turn around to your client and say, well, let's work on that. And if you only need 1,500 square meters, look at that. Look at that cost saving. Look at what you're actually putting in your back pocket over that 3 to 5 year period. And then you can reinvest that into ergonomics, lead, well, health and safety, COVID, social distancing, technology, software, various things like this. And this is what excites me about the industry. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think gone are the days where a client can easily rock up to you and say, I've got 80 staff, so I need 80 desks, and I need 10 meeting rooms and this, that, and the other. There is a piece to be done, like you say, before you get anywhere near talking about what spaces you need. There's a much more basic understanding of how do you work? How are you going to operate? What is it you do? Who interacts with who? How do they interact? What it's more about facilitating rather than just saying, yeah, I have 80 staff, I need 80 desks, and I need 4 meeting rooms and that sort of thing. So and this is part of the reluctance that we find at time to time here is there's a number of projects where we've sort of been engaged, or even the designer's been engaged, or the designer's engaged first, then the project manager comes on, or the client's let a space, and then they've got someone on, you're like, it would have been great if you'd had us on 3 or 4 months ago. So that the cost manager could have given you a cost estimate as to how much it's going to cost you to do this before you've got a designer who's 2-3 months into design, and suddenly you're like, oh yeah, okay. So you've fallen in love with the design that we've now told you can't afford. Actually, it's probably functionally not really what you need. So yeah, it's difficult because, completely understandably, if you a lot of, not all companies have a real estate head or someone who's sort of from the construction industry who knows the sort of flow of the works, who need to get on first. If someone said, I need to redesign or refit my office, the first thing a lot of people go is, oh, okay, we'll get a designer on board. Yeah, but how does the designer doesn't necessarily know how your budget's going to work. They'll work with you on the functionalities and all that side of things, but there's the element of, yeah, but that needs to tie into cost, it needs to tie into the programming of it, because the other thing you get here is a lot of people look at their lease renewals 6 to 8 months before that break clause. Yeah. Well, the problem is that typically a project in Dubai takes 6 to 8 months, or sort of 6 months. 6 months is fast, given approvals, design, and all that sort of thing. So, okay, we spent 2 months talking about it, we need to be out in 4 months. Well, you're not going anywhere in 4 months. There's nothing, nowhere is going to be ready for you. So yeah, it's difficult.
It's the same with new companies, Graham. It's the same with new companies that they'll come and say, oh, we've got a lease, we want to go into this office, we've got 2 months grace period, and we want to be in a month. I'm sorry. Listen, there's a saying that I like to use that one of my mentors, Rob Moore, you don't know what you don't know. So if you've got startups and you've got organizations that are nuts within PMC design and construction or interior design and build, then they're not necessarily going to know. And that's our responsibility collectively to try and do things like this and educate them, in which they should be looking at the, what is it, plan to fail and fail to plan. You know, let's plan a year in advance or 18 months in advance of knowing that the break clause is coming, or knowing that we're going to have to move office for whatever reason. It's a bit like doing your budgets. Why would you do your budgets in January of the year that you've just started your budget? You need to be doing your budgets in Q3 for the following year. You know, let's plan. And it's up to us to try and, you know, guide people in the right direction. But yeah, those... that's probably one thing that you will not change overnight, is that there's so many things going on to try and consider, space being one of them, that to try and get in as early as possible and speak to these people and advise them is something that we're both keen to do.
Yeah, it's the difference between in a lot of industries, a year is an incredibly long time, whereas in construction, a year is not, a year disappears like you wouldn't believe. So if someone's like, yeah, our lease is up next year, and you're like, okay, let's talk about your projects and what you're doing. No, it's next year, we'll talk about it in June. And you're like, oh, don't do that. Like, that's just the first, like, we're already behind the eight ball, we're stuck.
Yeah.
Everything becomes fast track. You're limited in design by what's available and procurable within your timeframes and this, that, and the other. And before you know it, you get to the end and everyone's done their best, including the client, to get on as early as they realized they needed you, and designed as best they can, but they're limited by procurement times and construction times. And you get to the end and you're like, is this really what you had in mind for your brand new office that's cost you X amount of money? Possibly not. Sometimes
you've had to shoehorn the execution. I mean, sometimes I firmly believe that the design and the planning element of a project should be about 50% of the overall program.
Yeah.
Because as long as you put that recipe together and you've got the ingredients, let's say the procurement is done and I factor the procurement within that planning stage and everything is in country and potentially on site and you have the relevant DCD or QCD approvals, the execution is the easy part.
Mm.
The handover is the easy part. It's when things are blended. It's when things are changed. It's when things are not decided and you're trying to run first fix and second fix MEP in parallel with first fix and second fix architectural and your FF&E and furniture haven't been signed off yet.
And that's it. It's just people understand. Yeah. Oh, so it's 12, 14 weeks on site, depending on obviously on the size and things like that. Yeah, it is. But there's a 12-week lead time for possibly fan coils, for instance. But they don't get installed 2 weeks before you move into your office. They need to be there months ago. Things like that. So it's like it just all everything kicks into everything else and shuffles you back. And to be honest, the clients understand it very quickly when you outline it. It's like, yeah, if you want to be in on this date, you work them backwards. And then they see the date they're at, and then they see your hand keep moving backwards, and they quickly understand, oh yeah, that all makes perfect sense. But like you say, you only know what you know. If you don't do construction and you're not aware of construction, then how would you ever be expected to know that? And that is a challenge. There's no reason for them to know.
It's our responsibility to educate the clients. I kind of got a bit of a warm feeling there because, you know, when this goes out, it'll go on things like Facebook and it'll go on LinkedIn most likely is the one that we'll focus on because we all know other people in our industry and we're all talking about the same thing. And it's not the negatives that we're focusing on, it's the education to focus on the positives so that when we are speaking to clients, it's not a case of slow, quick, slow. It has to be done in a process. Multinationals should understand that more than anyone because they have processes for every single department. And they know that procurement, contracts, whether it's real estate, design and build, doesn't happen overnight. And if you start to mess with an interior design and build process, and don't implement the correct process at the very beginning by assessing your real estate and assessing the company ways of working, for example, to get the correct real estate, then everything else has a domino and knock-on effect. So no matter what elements you put in place that we spoke about earlier for online collaboration and four-dimensional scanning, if the planning at the start hasn't been done correctly or at all, and I wouldn't say the project's deemed to fail, but it's going to make it very, very challenging.
Yeah, and that's it. There's if you do the upfront building blocks correctly and in a timely way, then yeah, it sets you up to make the project an awful lot easier. But the most common mistake we've had in projects is simply the client didn't realize when the first step needed to happen. And it just was a month, 2 months, 3 months. That just would have been great if we'd had them, but we don't. So everyone makes the best in terms of design, procurement, construction of what you can. And that's what happens. But you know, there's no reason for them to know. It's about us putting it out there and educating them that if you're thinking about moving or doing a new office a year out, it would be a good idea to get in touch with the consultant sites and say, look, we're thinking about it. And because it gives you that portion of time, even if you did nothing else but understand how you work, because everyone now is changing how their office works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of designers have a lot of good information and input to give these guys, but because it's not just taking what you do now and moving it to a new location. It's an opportunity to rethink how your company works. And a lot of clients don't necessarily realize that, yeah, just because you've been doing that in this office for 5 years means it's the best way or the most efficient way to do it. There's a lot of thinking out there in the design world where they can help you not just have a nice office to look at, but actually make you work better and more efficiently in the space that you have.
Mm. I mean, that the sort of the back to work consultancies obviously becoming more popular. the workplace consultancy, because of all of the elements that we've spoken about, are services that that you and I are going to have to spearhead. That's what makes our industry so exciting, is that it never, ever stands still. I'm glad you concur that the office is not dead, because that's our life. That's our lifeblood. And the technology allows us to take our services and our advice and education further afield, rather than just where you are and where I am, certainly with the multinationals. It's been a really good in-depth conversation. I hope for the first episode everyone has enjoyed it and they can relate to it. If there's any comments, then please leave them on the thread wherever you see this, if it's primarily LinkedIn. And Graham McGregor, I will leave you to enjoy the rest of your day. What has the rest of the day got planned? I'm sure you're very busy today, getting in with the audience.
Yeah, you've set me up massively there. Yeah.
Not at all. You're a busy boy. You're working on Moroccan projects in Djibouti, and you know, absolutely. Seriously, mate, thank you so much. I said at the start of the conversation that about our industry and about the way that we met, it was one of my most successful projects. It was one of my funniest introductions, where I'd been given the contact name of the wonderful Kenny McRae, who kindly put me in touch with Zoe, who kindly then put me in touch with Chris Aird. And hope you're well, Chris. I think Chris is in Saudi now, enjoying himself on that huge project, of which Chris and I were neighbors, but he was in Dubai at the time. Which I think he had gone to university with Zoe. So this is all Scottish people, by the way. And then they introduced me to you. And then there was Fintan Kenny, a lovely Irish gentleman that we both know very well, who came in at the back end of the project. So it was, in the sake of a day, I'd gone from 4 to 5 Scottish people to an Irish chap at the end for this particular project, which was really good fun. Glad we've kept in touch. Thank you so much for joining me, and I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a nice afternoon and a nice weekend. Graham McGregor, thank you very much for your participation.
Thank you very much, Simon.
We'll see you next time on Space, Design and Build. Thanks for your time. Take care. Bye-bye.